When you think of John Muir, what comes to mind? Most likely, you think of his work in conservation, maybe his nature writings, maybe even his background in agriculture, his time in Wisconsin, of course. But this was news to me. He was also a prolific inventor.
According to our next guest, Muir's portfolio of inventions ran the gamut. He made everything from practical agricultural tools to an elaborate machine designed to make his sister's doll dance on top of a block. And had it not been for a freak accident, Muir may have invented a whole lot more.
Matt Blessing joins us now. He's the state archivist at the Wisconsin Historical Society. He recently wrote about John Muir's years as an inventor for the Wisconsin Magazine of History. Matt, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So as we mentioned, a lot of people think about John Muir and don't think of inventor, and I didn't. Is this a surprise to a lot of people when they hear this?
Right. Well, we think about John Muir, I think he is part of the pantheon of great environmental thinkers, along with Henry David Thoreau and Teddy Roosevelt, all the Leopold, Sigurd Olson, Gaylord Nelson, John Muir. Four out of the five names that I just mentioned have Wisconsin ties. But very few people know about his Wisconsin connection or about his inventions, which first brought him to fame.
And Muir got that inventing itch when he was a boy. He was growing up in Wisconsin on a farm. Can you tell us a little bit more about his early inventing days?
Sure. John Muir accompanied his father and younger brother to a farm right on the frontier in 1849. Wisconsin had become a state just a year before. The farm is located 7 miles south of present-day Montello. And this was a very remote area of the state at the time. Muir's father was a member of a Calvinist sect and kept very strict rules for both of his sons. John Muir had memorized the Old Testament by the time he was a young teenager. By memory and by sore flesh, he wrote in his memoir, The Story of My Boyhood and Youth. And he worked extremely hard, carving not just one but two farms out of the Wisconsin wilderness. By the time he's in his late teens, he starts to clash with his overbearing father. And it was all over bedtime, because as an 18 or 19-year-old, his father is insisting that his eldest son go to bed with the rest of the family after evening chores and after evening worship, which in the winter months was about 8 p.m. And as an 18 or 19-year-old, he chafes at that rule and clashes with his father, who he respected. And finally, one day, the father said, John, you must go to bed with the rest of the family, but you can get up at any given hour you wish. And Muir quickly discovers that he can rise at about midnight or 1 a.m., and rather than disturb the rest of the family, he goes to the cellar of his father's farmhouse, and he begins tinkering and inventing wooden contraptions that would ease the labor on the farm.
Yeah, talk about some of those first contraptions, those first inventions that Muir came up with in the cellar.
Well, the first thing he does is he finds a steel corset that had belonged to his mother, that it was just something around the farmyard that had been saved. And he very methodically snips and sharpens that corset into a bandsaw. And then he builds, the first thing he builds is a portable sawmill that he's able to carry around the farm. He actually dams a little creek on the farm to power that sawmill. This is in the late 1850s. But these are all basically labor-saving devices, a water wheel, an agricultural livestock feeder. And after he makes these inventions, then he goes and creates a second round of inventions that are basically timers that automate all of these things.
And it sounds like he, along the way, gets his big break at a fair in Wisconsin. Tell us about what he showed there and why it mattered.
Well, he had a very understanding neighbor who recognized Muir's genius, and that neighbor encouraged him to pack up some of these inventions and trudge them down to the state fair of 1860, which that year was on the far west side of Madison in present day where Camp Randall is. And so his brother drove him to the little town of Partyville, 9 miles away. Muir was so isolated, he had never been to the train depot at Partyville, and he rode the train down to Madison. And he was ushered into a building at the State Fair called the Temple of Arts, and he displayed two clocks and a homemade barometer. And for 3 days, over the course of that weekend of the State Fair, people thronged to this backwoods inventor who had whittled these these inventions. And it's actually, there were reporters at the State Fair looking for stories. And he lands himself on the front page of the Wisconsin State Journal as this inventor from Buffalo Township in central Wisconsin.
And he did start to go out into a career in factories and bringing this invention spirit into them. Talk about the next steps for him before he ended up on this. We'll get to the injury that led him in another direction.
Well, it's really two steps. First, from Camp Randall, he looks to the north and he sees a knoll about a mile away, and that's the beginnings of the University of Wisconsin. And before he goes home, he explores the University of Wisconsin campus, and he's back 3 months later enrolled as what we would call an adult special student, because he's pushing the age of 22 as a freshman. And he takes a room on the first floor of North Hall, which is still standing, halfway up Bascom Hill. And he has these inventions in his dorm room. And adventuresome mothers would bring their young children down to North Hall to look at these inventions.
Let's talk about some of those before we go too far. Sure. The self-waking bed?
Yes, yes. he had a clock that would, on the hour, remove one book and replace it with another so that he could keep up with all of his studies. And this clock was also attached to a bed that at the given hour each morning would lift the groggy student at a 45-degree angle. And when his feet hit the floor, another device would light an oil lamp for 3 minutes because he was conserving fuel. That would give him, he's a poor college student, and it would give him just enough lamp light to get dressed. And kids and their mothers would come and visit this room, and they would try out the wake-up bed.
Do we know if these things actually worked?
In the early 19-teens, he wrote his first autobiography, The Story of My Boyhood and Youth. And he describes one of the clocks that he had at the State Fair, saying that 50 years later, it was still working at his home in Martinez, California. Huh. And we also have evidence at the Historical Society of letters that were donated from some of his classmates at the University of Wisconsin who describe it in the first person years later.
We're talking with Matt Blessing right now from the Wisconsin Historical Society, and he recently wrote about John Muir's years as an inventor, maybe a side of him we didn't know so much about. You wrote about this for the Wisconsin Magazine of History, and you described sort of the self-waking bed and the light that went along with it. And he also, he did something nice for his sister. He wanted her doll to dance, and he set up something pretty elaborate. Can you describe that one for us?
Well, Muir was always kind to children, and he actually created this elaborate rigged system that with his youngest sister's doll that was automated and would actually dance on top of a block of wood. We don't actually have that invention. That has not survived the 150 years, but we do have an image of it that he self-illustrated for his autobiography, and that's available online. You can look at it on wisconsinhistory.org, the Historical Society's website.
Now, John Muir might be famous to us only as an inventor if he'd continued on this path, but as I mentioned, I teased a little earlier, he was working in a factory, and then something happened that made him rethink where he was going.
Right. After the Civil War, he landed a job in Indianapolis at a carriage manufacturer, and he was quickly recognized by the proprietors of that factory as a mechanical genius, and he was doing very well for himself as a self-taught engineer. He was there in 1866, 1867. He's about 28 years old, and he's at sort of a crossroads in his life. He does not know what he wants to do with his life, and one evening he was sharpening a file, and a piece of the file pierced his right cornea, The other eye then went into sympathetic shock, and for the next month or so, he lay in complete blindness with bandages over his eyes, and it was a transformational, shocking injury. And when the bandages were removed a month later, his sight had returned. And it's at that point where he decides to abandon this path where he's getting attention for these inventions and for his engineering genius. And that leads him to his life that that a lot of us know about in terms of his passion for the environment and the study of botany and glaciation and so forth.
So obviously something happened. He had a change of heart, and he thought, obviously he made something of this blindness, this injury that he went through. Do you know anything about his thinking about why he then turned to conservation, what it was about the blindness that steered him away from inventing?
Well, it really goes back to his time at the University of Wisconsin and the mentors, the faculty members that he met when he was in Madison. But in particular, a faculty member's wife by the name of Jeannie Carr. And it was Jeannie Carr who introduced a very young John Muir to Ralph Waldo Emerson. And in some, reading Emerson and his writings about oneness with nature and finding spiritual truth through nature, even to the point of ecstasy. And it was that work in a 19th century factory that, and recovering from that industrial accident, that steered him more towards the writings of the Transcendentalists, and eventually lands him in Yosemite and the Muir that most of us know.
And Matt, very briefly, we can see some of his drawings and actually some of the artifacts themselves at the Historical Society. Is that right?
Right. I mean, probably the most famous artifact that the Wisconsin Historical Society owns is in the first floor lobby of the headquarters building at the base of Bascom Hill. And it's the famous desk clock that circulated the books, has two enormous compasses as the front legs, kind of an homage to science. The back legs are made out of wooden blocks that are made to look like books, and just a fantastic artifact that I see handfuls of people each and every day marveling at this inventive genius.
Matt, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That's Matt Blessing with the Wisconsin Historical Society. He recently wrote about John Muir's years as an inventor for the Wisconsin Magazine of History.
Coming up, we talk about police body cam footage. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.